using Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Kent Biz Connect radio show with myself, Martin White, and...
And me, Brian Wakefield.
My fabulous co-host, Brian Wakefield, and we've got a full studio today, haven't we, Brian?
Oh, I tell you what, if you suffer from claustrophobia, you do not want to be here today. I've never seen so many people in the studio.
We've got four wonderful guests with us, so we're going to start on my right. So please tell us who you are and where you come from.
I'm Danielle from QBH Solutions.
Welcome, Danielle. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Dave Burton from QBH Solutions as well.
Dave, always a pleasure to see you.
Shannon Reynolds from Kent Space Ebbsfleet.
Shannon, lovely to have you.
And Sue McGowan from Kent Space All Over.
Brilliant.
Kent Space All Over, yes. Yeah.
Fabulous.
And it's great from Kent Space, because that, of course, is where we're broadcasting from as
Indeed
well.
Indeed so. It is.
Local interest.
In a wonderfully air-conditioned room, I must say, on this somewhat muggy day. Funny weather we're having, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. So fabulous. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We're going to run through some news, some events. Then we're going to talk to Sue and Shannon at about sort of 20, 25 past three, if we can. We'll play some little some tunage to kind of introduce you guys. And then we're going to have a little break, and then we're going to talk to Danny and Dave from QBH as well. So that's an hour and a half, and it's going to fly by. So, yeah. So we better get started, Brian, haven't we?
It's always a good idea, Whitey.
What's going on? You're the man with his finger on the pulse. Tell us what's happening out there.
What, on the news pulse?
Well, on every pulse.
Every sort of pulse. So what have we been doing? What have we been doing since we were last here, over the last couple of weeks?
So we're every other week, aren't we? Well, we hosted a networking last Wednesday with our good friends, the Ashford International Hotel.
Oh, in Ashford, yeah.
And the FSB, which went really, really well. So that was a lot of fun. We had the Marlowe Theatre guests speaking at that one. They've just sort of relaunched their business club, which is nice, and they run some fabulous networking events. So that was all good. What have you been up to?
Well, do you know what? I might have even come to that all the way from Maidstone, but I didn't, because I was pre-booked into Kent Space at Chatham.
Chatham.
Chatham, with Sue and Shannon, and we had Lisa Young as a speaker there, didn't we?
Yes.
Who gave us...
That'd probably be why she didn't turn up at our one then.
Was she booked on for it?
Despite the fact she was booked on.
Yeah. Oh, so you can't win them all.
She had a better offer, didn't she? That's what it was.
So there's always tons of networking going on, isn't there? And I know we're gonna talk about some of the events. But Sue, you're hosting one here, aren't you, this week on Wednesday evening? So
yeah, Wednesday evening, the last Wednesday of every month, we do a networking event in Ashford, and we've got Karen. Doing a presentation with her colleague on Wednesday evening, so that should be interesting. We normally have about 20 to 30 people come. Uh-huh. So, yeah, the numbers should be quite good.
And you, unlike a lot of networking events, you lay on a sumptuous buffet as well, don't you?
I know. Don't we, Brian?
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely, the food at Kent Space.
Is the Hoover coming?
I don't know, actually. Is the Hoover coming?
Yeah, I had 3 days' worth of food. I doggy bagged up for me, so it's brilliant.
I better try and get there early then. So yeah. That's this Wednesday evening from 5:30, is it?
Yep, 5:30 till
8. Here at the fabulous Kent Space.
Lectureset Building in Wotton Road.
With a guest speaker as well, so we're looking forward to that. I shall definitely be here. Good. Brian, why don't you tell us all the other stuff that's kind of going on. What's topical in the news at the moment, because there's always a lot happening.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. The one thing that caught my eye this week, it's a little bit retrospective, and I think the thing could be, do things go in cycles? Because at the moment we've got PlayStations and online gaming, and all the kids are doing that kind of stuff. But are things changing? And I'll tell you, you think, why do I think that, Martin? Well, I'll tell you, Martin, why I think that.
You're probably the wrong person to ask, aren't you?
Being the youngest one here.
Well, I'm not.
No, you're not, no. But Hornby, are infamous for being not a million miles from you down in Margate. Mm. Well, they've had a fairly dreadful 3 years, and they've actually lost £30 million as a business. So
gosh.
£10 million a year. Mm. We haven't got an accountant here, have we? Mm. But, yeah, so it's not the best set of records. However, they've just returned to Margate with fresh approaches, fresh ideas, and they've actually halved that in the last year. They've had their best year in several years. And why is that, I hear you ask? Well, basically, they're launching a whole host of new products, starting with the first new Airfix kit for 5 years. So do you remember Airfix? Gosh. Everyone remember Airfix?
Mm. Yep.
Well, that's basically making a comeback.
Yeah.
And this
Shannon's looking at us sort of blank.
Shannon hasn't got a clue. So, I might as well so be talking Danny. In German.
They're like, what Airfix?
But yeah, I know. Well, Hornby were always train sets and things. And what I didn't know is that it's Scale Electric's part of that as well. Mm-hmm. And they've just signed licensing agreements with Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Handy business to get involved with. Mm. So they've got licensing deals to do rollout models for Harry Potter, Wacky Races, Looney Tunes, both for Hornby and Scale Electric.
Now, so, those are retro names, aren't they? Wacky Races.
Remember that?
Gosh.
Catch the Pigeon came from that.
Yeah. And so, Muttley, was it Muttley?
Yeah, yes. Dick Dastardly and Muttley and all that kind of stuff.
Go on, do the laugh.
And Sue, I'm going to ask you to do the laugh. Yeah, that's it. That is it. He's just done it. That is exactly it.
I'll let you into a little secret. That was actually my nickname at school.
What, Muttley?
Muttley. Mutts, for short. Mutts, yeah.
We can see why, can't we?
There
we can
go.
See why. So, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. That
just like the Luis Figo shampoo advert. You know, you've still got it.
Have I'm still talking one? About Hornby here, yeah, Martin. No, okay. You're digressing. You're going off at a ridiculous tangent. So I think the moral of the story is that, you know, they've just had their best year in several years. Half the deficit, lots of new ideas, lots of groundbreaking stuff, but kind of retro. So what do we think of that? Have we got any examples, panel, of businesses that we think might be making a bit of a, doing a U-turn and making a comeback?
What's hot and retro at the moment, apart from Hornby?
Well, I was about to say me, but that's really not true.
you old devil.
I know, sorry. I was just saying, I went up to Hamley's a couple of weeks ago with my daughter, and she said, you could have a look around, what do you want? And we looked at the dolls, and we looked at the radio control, everything that's in there, and she wanted a train set. So that's great.
Really?
We spent half an hour trying to put it together, and then got played with for about 10 minutes.
Wow. Well, that,
I hope it's a Hornby one.
Yeah. It was, yeah, it was.
Music you are. To Hornby's ears. So train sets are... wow. So, that's incredible. Yeah. What else is sort of hot and retro? Everything's retro at the moment, isn't it?
Retro gaming stuff's coming back.
Yeah, Nintendos and stuff like that.
Those consoles that you used to spend ages getting going. You plug them into the back of the telly and they're ready to go. I think it's feeding into a nostalgia. That was there maybe from when, I use this term loosely, but when we were growing up, when we were at school. And
so the first one was like the simple, the tennis one, wasn't it, with a bat?
Yeah, Pong.
Pong,
yeah.
Which used to go off the sides, and then we went on to kind of Space Invaders and Asteroids and Pac-Man and stuff like that.
I noticed, Sue, you turned up in a pair of flares today.
Yeah.
So some bell-bottoms.
Leather flares, Sue.
So, so obviously on a clothing level, I guess, is there some retro stuff, Shannon?
I wore a pair of flares the weekend.
There you go.
Did you? Any there particular you reason, Shannon?
I was at a hen do.
Ah,
it was festival themed.
Yeah.
So, I wore some flares then.
And, of course, Glastonbury is still bigger than ever, isn't it? I mean, that's with this weekend, I think. Glastonbury starts, doesn't it? Is it Thursday or Friday night it starts, Glastonbury? So festivals are still as big as they've always been. So I'm all for it. Bring back some of that.
It all goes in a big circle.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Good. Anyway.
So I think anybody looking for work in Margate, there's openings soon because... as part of the story, they were saying that lots of people had left over the last few years. And now some of them are being asked to come back to cope with demand and the work. So if you want a job, get onto Hornby.
Wonderful.
And make train sets on Scale Electric. Mm.
Good news. A good news story there. Let's have another good news story, because it was the Kent Excellence in Business Awards last week, wasn't it?
Hebert, your friends.
The Detling Showground, showcasing the best of Kent. So, do you know anything about that? You were invited, but you didn't go.
Not a lot. I know, and I'm absolutely gutted. I've got to be better at making decisions under pressure, I think.
I think you have.
Yeah, yeah, it was the last... I got an invite to go. This was literally at about 2:30 to be told I'd be picked up at 5 and driven there and back again. And I had to decline because I had something else on, which I didn't make because it was an accident up near Ewstoo at the top of Bluebell Hill.
So again.
It took me an hour again. Mm-hmm. And the the previous week I'd had a similar try and get to you as well. So
well, I
didn't make it, so I should have gone.
I think Barrett's of Canterbury were certainly amongst the winners. So we're all familiar with the sort of Jaguar Land Rover chain of Barrett's. So I think the founder of Barrett's was certainly honoured as a kind of a lifetime achievement award. Walker Construction, who I met at the Marlow Theatre recently, one of their business evening networking events, they were certainly amongst the winners. Sleeping Giant Media, who always seem to be there.
Yeah, they always get mentioned.
On a sort of employee and also customer service level, I think... award were also there. So, and I know Jo James was there. We were talking about last time with her with her OBE. So Jo was there. So it sounded like a cracking evening, actually. So have you
picture of her OBE? I thought that was Kaz actually in the picture, but maybe not.
Oh,
maybe
Kaz was certainly there. Kaz is always
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Gallagher's were very prominent there, yeah, I think, as well. Yeah. So yeah, it's Linda Cloak and Anita Brightley Hodges from the Family Place that were going.
Right.
So.
What's our kind of view of awards and things? Do you Kent Space Guys, do you get involved with that? And
I try every year, but I do get stopped. I don't know why.
So you mean to enter and
yeah.
then you...
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I think we will do eventually.
Right. Is it just a time thing? Is it the kind of sheer volume of info?
It's a little bit of a timing thing.
Yeah.
It's the information that they need from you as well. It does get quite... diggy.
Because they want financial stuff and all sorts, don't they?
Yeah, so, and although we're a very clean company and run things absolutely perfect, you know, one of the directors just thinks, well, you know, why do you really need to
yes.
know all of that?
Yeah, it's a little bit too...
Yeah, but I think he's warming up to the idea because he knows how hard we all work.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice for everybody.
Well, you are a huge success story locally, so it'd be nice to celebrate that. But as you say, I know what you mean. I've looked at the form myself in the past and thought, crikey, you know, this is... You want my management accounts. And a lot of businesses are a little bit reluctant to share that kind of information, aren't they? So I can understand that.
Oh, yeah, maybe one day.
Mm. Yeah, OK. What about you, Dave? Have you ever been into the sort of the... The awards kind of banging the drum thing? And
yeah, I think it's a great opportunity to celebrate local business, which I think is important. It's something that I did in a previous life, when I had a proper job, when I used to work for people. It's certainly something that we're thinking about, but like you said, it's the time, the energy is quite personal. I mean, not that we've got anything to hide, but
no, exactly,
it just takes a while to put it all together. But, you know, and congratulations to all those nominees and award winners. But it's something we'd like to do. Maybe
I think there's a time and a place, isn't there? And I mean, you know, businesses like Sleeping Giant, a lot of people forget. You know, I think they're about 13 years old now, something like that. So it's not like they're a kind of a new entrant. So I guess, you know, you need to have all of that in place to be able to kind of do it properly. I guess if you're going to do it properly, and that means you've got to spend the time doing it, and you've got to have the resource to do it. I guess, haven't you? So there's a lot of great businesses, I'm sure, that are very much under the radar on that level, and you know, both of you obviously, you know, included in that. So yeah, but watch this space.
We'll be there one day.
Good. Brian, let's have a quick run through of some events that people might want to get involved with this week.
Right, you kick off then.
All right, so I'll start with the Ashford International. So they've got another comedy night this Friday the 28th of June. And actually, if you mention Supply My Business, you can have a ticket for £26, including a two-course set supper, and they're even throwing a disco afterwards as well. So I've no idea what time that finishes. It sounds like a late one to me, but it's always a lot of fun. This is actually the official comedy club that run this event once a month at the Ashford International. If you'd like to book on, if you'd like to maybe take your team on a night out, they've got one obviously in July, it is every month, although it's not all year long. I think maybe they don't do it in the winter, but certainly over the summer. Get yourselves onto the community page of Supply My Business. All the details are in there. You just need to ring up and book.
Mm. Brilliant. This Wednesday, the 26th, great friend of BBN, Mr. Gary Johnson, has his own networking event, Network Kent, which is up at Bridgewood Manor, last Wednesday of every month. And that's from 10:30 through till about 12:30. Always a speaker. And coffee, biscuits, and plenty of networking, all on hand for a tenner.
Brilliant. Great value. This Thursday, and I certainly know you've been there before. I don't know about you, Dave, but there is this new thing, this new kid on the block called LinkedIn Local.
Yeah.
And there's another one this Thursday evening. I think they're quarterly. I don't know if you're going this time, Sue. Are you able to make it this time?
I've got to be up and ready to leave for 4:30 on Friday morning, so I'm going to give that one.
Of course, we'll come on to talk about that later. But a good friend of Supply My Business, Oasis, that's Oasis Software, they're actually running a pub quiz on the night at LinkedIn Local. So you can enrol either individually or you can have a team. And there's free drinks and bar snacks and prizes to be won. So that's something a little bit different that they're offering at LinkedIn Local on Thursday evening. I think it starts at 5:00, you were saying, Brian, is that right?
Yeah, it does. They've brought it forward an hour because there's a lot of people. There's 300 or 400 people involved. It's quite a big event, and I think 6 till 9 was a bit of a squeeze. Ordinarily, 5:00 start would be better, but Thursday's a bit hectic because we've got BBN Dartford first thing with 50-odd people. Then we've got one of the BBN golf days straight after, and then to then get down, we normally eat about 4:30, so to get all the way from kind of Wilmington down to Great Danes by 5:00, I think it's a bit of an ask.
Well, I'm sure you'll be sorely missed. For those of you that haven't booked on yet, please do book on because they do have a registration at reception. The website is lilk.co.uk. So it's linkedinlocalkent.co.uk. And again, the pub quiz is all on the community page of Supply My Business.
Lilk.
Lilk. With a totally tropical taste. Is that... No, that was Lilk.
Close.
Sorry, that's the retro theme.
What are you saying about your hearing? Arden, 4:30. Yes. 2nd of July, which is actually next week. How scary is that? So, Base Point Chatham. Again, a quarterly. I've not been for a while. They don't actually promote it that extensively, but I stumbled across something because Ali Harold is a speaker. So that's in the dockyard at Chatham on the 2nd, which is Tuesday, I think. 11 to 1 in the daytime, that is, not the evening.
Superb. Something else that's going on Wednesday, Sue, which is where I shall be before I pop along to your wonderful networking, is our good friend Terry Marsh from Marsh Networking is running a charity golf day. So that's at Lid Golf Club. Down on the marsh. It's 18 holes of golf. There's a meal, there's a raffle, there's a bacon roll on arrival. All of that, also in support of Calm, which is a local elderly support charity. All of that for £35. And that's marshnetwork.co.uk. So if you fancy entering a team or you'd like to go along on an individual basis, I'm sure Terry could probably just about squeeze you in even at this late hour. So, yeah. See you there.
Okay.
Brian.
Last one from me. Just a quick shout out for our little cuddly friend Kaz Macklin at the Chamber. And she'll love me all the more for this, I'm sure. So she's got an hosting after hours event up at Bridgewood Manor again on the 4th, which is Thursday of next week. And that's from 6 to 7:30 and after hours. And they're free. Just pop on. Don't have to book or anything like that. So stumble across a gem.
Brilliant. Great. Well, I think we'll bring that to a close there. I think it's fair to say as we get into peak summer season, there are slightly fewer events happening, which is good in a way because it means that actually we've got more chance of going to more of them because they do tend to be clustered around certain days, don't they, quite often, which is, you know, which is frustrating at times. But they seem to be kind of being a bit more spread out now, which is great, so we can enjoy even more networking. In fact, I must give a shout out for Port Lim, who hosted a wonderful networking this morning.
Oh, you went this morning?
I did. I was trying to block out the afternoon tea from my mind because I had a huge sugar rush after eating the most enormous scone.
They didn't keep you in then, clearly.
No, and they didn't feed me to the lions, which was a relief. So, yes, so they're obviously on a... they also have relaunched their business membership and corporate sponsorship recently, which they're very keen to publicise. I think they have a target of over £2 million that they need to raise, independent of all of the hotel operations and, you know, entry tickets and everything else. This is purely on a kind of a corporate fundraising level. That's the target that they've set themselves this year.
Ask.
It's a big number, isn't it?
How are they going to do that?
Well, they need to be talking to businesses. They need to be getting the word out there. And that's partly what this morning was all about. It's all about business engagement, business community engagement, and, you know, making the right connections and hopefully, you know, slowly but surely raising the money and hitting their target. And we'll talk about fundraising in a minute because I know Sue's on a bit of a fundraiser herself. But
is she?
It's, you know, it is slowly, and, you know, chunk by chunk. You know, that's kind of how the fundraising world works. So good luck to them for that. And we look forward to some more fabulous networking at Port Lim.
Well, you're doing some fundraising
in the near future.
Soon as well,
well,
aren't you?
I know. We'll talk about that another
time.
It's
not about us, is it?
It's not about us. It's not about us.
Climbing Everest or whatever.
No. Right. I think what we're going to do now is should we play some tunage?
Are we going to have a tunage with a link to our first guest?
Well, that's the
idea.
And we
have to try and guess the link.
This is
the best part of the show, actually.
It can be a bit tenuous at times, but we try our hardest. So we're going to play some tunage, and then we'll see you on the other side and see if you can work out the link. Well, welcome back, everybody. And go on, give us a clue, Brian.
Well, that was Babylon Zoo, the infamous Babylon Zoo, and it was Space Man. Space Man.
Space. Where's
in Kent
the link?
Space.
Oh.
And we're talking to two people from Kent Space.
Ah, it's not that we're in outer space.
No,
we're
nothing in, like that. Although I do wonder sometimes, but no, it wasn't that. That was not the link, Martin.
We are in the fabulous offices. There you go. Of Kent Space.
Kent Space.
So, Sue and Shannon, welcome to the show. For those of us out there who don't know what Kent Space is and where you are and what you do, in your own words, tell us. Yeah.
What's
please.
Your name? Where are you from? No, it's a different show, isn't it?
Go on then, Shannon.
So, we have three business centres where we provide serviced offices, self-storage, meeting rooms and mailboxes. We have one here at Ashford, one in Chatham, and we're opening a new one in July in Ebbsfleet.
How exciting. So you're expanding, you're growing as a business, yeah. Which is wonderful. You are a success story. Brilliant. So what sort of size are we talking about? How many sort of businesses are we talking about being resident at any one site, or does it vary by where you are?
So Ashford is our biggest site, right. And Ebbsfleet will be the same size as Chatham. So we have, I don't know, how many offices are here?
So we're going to do it in two phases. Mm-hmm. So first phase will be 28 suites, and then second phase will be another 21 suites. So we'll have just, close to 50 offices available, and then we've got 23,000 square foot of storage as well. That we're going to have at Ebbsfleet again in two phases, phase one and then phase two. And we've also got a dedicated co-working space in Ebbsfleet, which we don't have in Chatham or Ashford just yet. But Ashford is the beast. It's the huge building.
Right.
Yeah.
So in total, there will be 50 offices here in the near future. Is that right?
There's 51 here in Ashford.
Already?
There is
already.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's 55, actually.
Gosh.
And the offices are complete as far as build goes, so there weren't any extras. We will have just under 50 in Ebbsfleet, and we've got 32 in Chatham.
Right. Now, these offices, they vary quite a bit, don't they, in terms of size and I guess, therefore, monthly rent. So tell us, how does that side of things work?
They're rented per calendar month, a month in advance. That we don't work them out on a square footage per room per se. Every room has its rental cost, and some of them that don't have outside windows are taken into consideration, and they're at a reduced rate. So people do like to have fresh air, and the others are definitely competitive and in keeping with what's in the area and what you get for your money. With Kent Space is very good.
Because we're talking about an all-inclusive package rather than you got to add this on and then add that on and...
Yeah, you basically get all your furniture, your telephone handsets, you get use of all of the tea, coffee and biscuits, which are lethal, in all of the centres, and then you just pay for the additional things like your broadband and your telephone.
Right, okay. And the broadband, presumably, you provide those services, but you charge them on an additional, just a flat fee, a monthly kind of service charge, I guess, for that.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your cheapest office? So
the cheapest office we do is in Ashford.
Right.
It's the smallest one. We don't have any of them available now, but we did a really good rate for the startups, and that was started off at £350 a month.
Right, and that's all inclusive, isn't it?
That's good, isn't it? I was going to guess at 500, so I think 350, pretty much any business would be able to afford that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Which is good.
We've got no 130s left, which is the smallest one. 150, we've got one of those available here. And Shannon, we've reserved all of those in
Ebbsfleet. Yeah, we have no small offices available at the moment.
But you will have a co-working space there, which is
So how will that work with the co-working? Because I know it's quite big at the moment. There's a lot of it going on, and I know there's a big need for it. So, what do they? How does that kind of work? Do people sort of they can come in 2 days a week or a certain amount of hours per week, or
they buy a package, so they can buy a package that allows them in any 2 days per week, every week, a month, or they can come in every day per week if they want to. They can rent a locker as well, keep their stuff in a locker, and they get the use of the breakout area, the drink, the coffee, the tea, biscuits, and free Wi-Fi.
Okay, so that's like on a hot desking arrangement, so they sit wherever's free.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Pretty much, and there's Shannon's done some work and got ourselves a dedicated taxi firm as well, so that anybody that comes in from Ebbsfleet train station, they've got their little hot backbone that they can ring, and they just get a cab, don't they?
Yep.
Like getting a taxi from Asda, isn't it?
So, I mean, Sue, you and I were having this conversation at a well-known networking event, not a million miles from us, the other week in Dartford, and we were talking about why somebody who was perhaps considering their first office space, going into that maybe for the first time, why they would kind of want to go it alone and be out on a limb somewhere with no other businesses around them, versus, you know, coming to somewhere like Kent Space and almost having a ready-made, potentially, customer base on site. I mean, for me, it was kind of mind-boggling to hear the thought process that somebody was going through on that level for the sake of maybe, you know, a couple of quid.
Yeah, I mean, it's so flexible. You don't need to stay for anything longer than 4 weeks if you don't want to.
Right.
It is a ready-made network of people for that business.
I mean, apart from the fact you run your own networking every month on site, you know, there are up to 50 businesses located on site that you can just kind of
tap into.
Knock on the door and say, hi, I've just moved in. I just thought I'd, you know, if you've got a minute, tell you what I do.
And invariably, some of our clients do business between them.
Mm-hmm.
We do business with our clients.
Yes, you know, of course you do.
They're under the same roof, why don't you?
Mm. Yeah.
It works out quite well,
doesn't
it?
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, Dave, you've got your own office over in Dover. You used to be at Base Point in Folkestone. What was the thinking behind your move out of that kind of serviced office space environment into your own space, as it were?
It was purely selfish. We just moved house.
Right.
So one of the few perks, I suppose, of running your own business is being able to work quite close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a Kent Space or a Base Point in that part of Kent at
right.
the moment.
Where you are in Dover.
So where we are. So it was a difficult decision because the community in a serviced office somewhere like this is so not. You can go and have a cup of coffee or whatever, and you'll bump into somebody and you have a chat, and it feels very, very friendly. We also had a space at the workshop down in Folkestone on Tontine Street for a while as well, and just to have that co-work and that opportunity to bounce ideas, actually, marketing, stuff like that, can be really powerful, really helpful. Mm.
But for you, the kind of the proximity to home kind of was more
the model,
powerful.
Yeah, I mean, the model that we're looking at now as a business and the growth that we're looking at, it's slightly different to where we were maybe this time last year.
Mm.
And I've got a Jack Russell puppy. Right. Not Jack Russell, sorry, that was my old dog. A Sprocker Spaniel puppy.
Right.
So she comes into the office quite a lot. And we're sharing with an accountant, my accountant as well. So
now that's a new one on me, a Sprocker Spaniel.
Cross between a Springer and a Cocker Spaniel.
Ah,
so there you go.
Sort of, well, that's the obvious one. That's the obvious
kind of
one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So but yeah, no, it wasn't an easy decision, but it's one that's kind of worked for us now.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Okay, but it's not just office space we're talking about, is it? Because it's storage, and it's mailboxes. So, just talk to us a little bit about mailboxes. Why would I need a mailbox, for example, as a business? What does that actually give me?
It's an address where. In our building, it's not a PO box. It's a suite number, so it would have their company name at the top, then the suite number, and then our address. It's £30 a month, and they can just come and collect their post Monday to Friday, and or you can just come to reception and we can go and grab it for you.
Right.
But it is for personal use as well. So if you're going abroad or if you're moving house, somewhere for you to be able to still have your post sent to.
So for a business, is that like a stamp of credibility? Is that how they use it? Because it, let's say, for example,
a personal address, I guess.
Yeah, let's say you're self-employed and effectively you do run your business on an admin level from home, even though you might be out on the road all day, but you don't really want all of your business correspondence coming to your home address, and you actually don't want your suppliers or your customers know where you live either. Mm. I guess it's quite a nice, neat solution, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. And that's £30 a month.
Facetious there, but I won't.
Mm. No.
Never, Brian. Never.
So,
never.
And as you say, if you're perhaps overseas for a while as well, and you still need to receive mail, I mean, you can give somebody the key. I guess it is literally a physical mailbox, isn't
it?
Yeah. And it has a key, and you can come in and access it as and when you want to. So someone can come in and pick your mail up, for example.
Yes.
Which
we
is quite handy.
Forward it to people as well.
Yeah. So you do mail forwarding.
Lots of people on boats and caravan parks and things.
I bet. Yeah.
They need to be able to register their driving license or their bank account or from a personal level, and then the businesses they exactly that they don't want anybody like a rep knocking on their front door.
No.
Mm.
No.
Yeah,
or
so.
Lots of direct mail or whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. So that's mailboxes. We've done serviced office space.
Storage.
Now. For anybody that lives with somebody that likes to collect things, which I do, Brian's been to my house, so he knows exactly what I'm talking about.
It's a museum.
a working museum. A little bit of extra storage can come in handy, can't it? For all manner of reasons. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that. How many sort of storage suites have you got here and how does that work? Are they different sizes or...?
Well, here, there's 33,800 square foot of storage.
Gosh.
Made up of varying sizes, so anything from a locker all the way up to a container, sort of 200 square foot. Chatham, not so much, 25,000 square foot and 23,000 square foot in Ebbsfleet. The exciting thing is about Ebbsfleet is that we're going to be the leaders in Britain, or in the UK, to get a keyless entry to the storage units. So you'll be able to open your storage units with an app on your phone.
Wow.
Or a fob, and that will de-alarm and re-alarm.
So 24/7
access. 24/7
access,
yeah.
That's amazing,
isn't it? Yeah. I guess it's used a lot if people are moving house and they've moved out but haven't moved in yet. And they're going to be in limbo for a month or two, perhaps.
Yeah, lots and lots of different uses. I mean, storage on the whole is normally really quite stressful for people. So it's, they're either being kicked out, they've divorced, that somebody's died, the house has dropped out, you know, they've gone to move into a house and it's all falling through.
Their wives have got a vintage clothes collection.
Going
retro again, it's that retro thing.
We do have people store their wardrobes.
Yes, good.
Or if you've got a vintage wife.
I can see the value in that.
Nobody's, Brian, nobody.
So did you say you've actually got a storage unit as big as a container?
Yes.
So presumably then you have businesses that use the storage space for their business because it's cheaper for them to have a storage unit
Rather than a much bigger office.
Yeah, their own kind of facility. Is that right?
Yeah.
So they can come in and out as they want and take stuff and,
Yeah, no, it's very popular for business stores because of the 24/7 access as well, and it's in a secure, dry area. They go up to a double garage size at Chatham and Ebbsfleet as well.
Yeah.
So, it's just somewhere where they're... Because it's secure and their tools, or it could be a carpet company.
Because there's an awful lot of businesses on eBay now, for example, aren't there, who are importing directly from, you know, the Far East or, you know, wherever it might be.
And they haven't necessarily got huge premises to store everything.
Exactly, and they don't need it because they can hire one from you guys. And presumably they do need to be on site when there's a delivery made, or so you can manage that for them as well. So I could have a logistics company pick up my small container worth of stuff from Dover or wherever it comes in, drive it here, and you'll take delivery for me. Yeah. Wow. I don't even have to be here.
No.
Gosh.
And then we'll either put it straight in your unit or we'll put it in a holding unit, and then we just contact the client to know that it's arrived.
Okay.
And then they let us know what they want done with it.
Gosh.
That's great.
That's amazing service, isn't it?
Mm.
Now, these containers, they generally have to be unpacked before the sort of container lorry goes off again. What if it needs to be unpacked and put into the unit? Can you manage that as well for a price or not?
If we know what it is, mm-hmm. And if it can be handled by
It doesn't need a forklift or whatever.
For the cost, we'll stick it all into their unit. Or we just put it on a pallet into somewhere bigger and they get their people down to do it.
Yeah. That is amazing service, isn't it? Mm. I mean, that really would enable somebody to manage... You know, if you were literally just a sort of marketing and logistics business, you know, with a partner like you, you could manage that whole operation quite easily, couldn't you? I mean, and I guess you can also send stuff out, can you?
People give us stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
And they just arrange to get it collected. So as long as we know who it's for and where it's going,
mm-hmm.
again, it goes into our holding unit, the courier turns up or the lorry driver turns up and we point them in the right direction, they pick it up and off they go.
Gosh.
Hmm.
That's very
powerful,
isn't it?
Unless they're dealing with me and I have sent something to the wrong place.
Mm.
It went to Edinburgh instead of Southampton.
Yes.
Close.
I did.
Yeah.
It was a good job the client liked me.
Yeah. Tested that to the end.
Simple mistake to make. So.
Presumably, it's not, you don't kind of cross over onto the, almost like the old bank stuff, maybe, safe deposit boxes or maybe storage of high value stuff?
We
or?
Have looked into safety deposit boxes because there's a huge potential for a massive square foot rate because you can get so much for those, but the security risk outweighs the income that you can benefit from it.
Purely the insurance would be...
Well, the insurance isn't too bad. It's... obviously, having it built and in the correct room is one thing, but it's the thought of putting our own staff at risk. If somebody knew of anything of high value going into that building, as secure as it is, they've only got to turn up to reception with a sawed-off shotgun and escort them out to there, and we just don't want to put anybody in that position. Mm. So not that it's highly unlikely that that would ever happen, but... that's one of our biggest scares, yeah. So, no, not for the minute.
Mm. Mm.
And there's a programme, isn't there, I think, in America... And it's aired on, I don't know, one of these daytime TV channels. And there's so many of them these days on Sky. But they have it's a programme all about where somebody's had a storage locker, but they've obviously deceased or something, or they haven't paid their bill, and then they break into it and they auction it. Is that right?
Is that what it is, storage was?
So do you...
You're often at home in the day, so are you, to watch these sort of things?
On the odd occasion, are you faced with those problems as well, where somebody, they've stopped paying their bill and they've got a locker with you, you know, and so what do you do? How do you manage something like that? I mean, what do you do?
So if they have... they put down a refundable deposit when they take out the unit, and that is also for if they are to not pay their bill, it will cover their arrears. But there have been times, we're really lucky it doesn't happen that often, but there have been times when we have had to get someone in to take their goods away, because they've just disappeared.
But take them where? What happens to them? Because in America this is the whole thing,
you auction,
you bid for it blind.
Well, auctions in storage are illegal in the UK.
Oh, right.
We can get people in to give us a price on taking it away,
right.
But we can't have the, you know...
You can't do all that.
No, it's illegal.
All right. Yes. Oh, that's really good to know, isn't it? Because in the States, obviously, it clearly isn't. And there's a lot of people making a lot of money out of it.
What, a blind auction?
Like, yeah, it's done blind.
They did outlaw it, didn't they?
Because
people were spending a lot of money for a... tin of fresh air, basically.
Sadly,
well, not very fresh air.
The bulk of what people have in storage is worth nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about.
Because
most of your clients, your storage customers, presumably it's private rather than business. So, I mean, what sort of... I mean, could I put a car in there, for example, if it was... You know,
we've had a Caterham stored before.
Yeah.
As long as it's drained of all of its fuel.
yes.
and it can physically get in the building, then, motorbikes are stored with us because people get them nicked a lot.
I'm just thinking about the Italian job. Do you remember Michael Caine?
Very well.
Comes out of jail for a bank job or something. He's been in there for 10 years, done some time. And he pops around and picks up his Aston Martin, doesn't he, from the local garage in Soho where it's been stored for, immaculately kept for 10 years.
And it starts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you can store items as big as that for people.
As long as there's nothing in the tank,
Yes. Okay.
They drain all the flammable fuel.
Mm. So you roll it in there and gosh.
So it's not ideal. We do have a lot of bikes that do that. If they're not commuting, they're just fair weather riders. They'll store their bikes in, and they're quite happy to have the heartache of going down and filling it back up with fuel.
Yeah. Actually, that's not. I mean, it's not inconceivable, is it? I mean, where I live, it's all jet skis. The number of jet skis you see parked on people's sort of driveways, you think, God, what a waste of space, because 5 months out of the year you wouldn't go anywhere near it because it's so flipping cold.
Mm.
But I could just stick it in one of your units, couldn't I? It'd be much more secure.
Quad bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All of that stuff. So, it's pretty good.
Brilliant. Let's talk about Ebbsfleet because I know it's July, is it? You've got the official opening. Is it still July?
Yeah, we're aiming for the middle of July.
Mid-July, brilliant, which is only a couple of weeks' time. Let's not talk about July as if it's kind of some distant...
Yeah, next month.
...distant date. We're now at the end of June this week.
Mm.
So in 2 weeks' time, roughly, you're opening for business.
Yeah, that's a plan,
Shannon's not looked at her calendar for a while. She's just going, oh,
Shannon's
God.
Living in a porter cabinet at the moment,
2 weeks? Oh, my God.
That's scary. Yeah, fingers crossed.
So tell me, what's the fanfare? What's happening? Have you got the mayor coming and what's going on?
The opening we're going to probably do in August, the evening or the day, because we've still got some car park stuff to sort out. So although the building will be okay, the outside, so we want it to be absolutely perfect by the time. So we'll probably have the opening in August. And yes, we're going to be inviting...
us.
Of course, you lot.
Good.
Yeah, we're going whether we're invited or not.
Yeah. We're hoping to get the military wives down as well to sing.
That'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Yeah.
And invite as many people as we can to come down and have a look around. Because it's going to be, although we absolutely adore Chatham and Ashford, and they are, incredibly special places, Ebbsfleet is just another notch up from what
we've you're building here. This from scratch, aren't you?
Pretty much, we had an empty shell. We literally gutted it, and we've put everything back in.
Mm.
And there's a lot of thought gone into it. There's lots of glass. It's very contemporary. It's very airy, very open.
Lovely.
Very modern.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're looking forward to showing it off to everyone.
Brilliant. Well, we look forward to that. And I guess you're aiming for a... Is it a slightly different dynamic of business because you're so close to London? And how do you see the market in Ebbsfleet versus Ashford or Chatham, for example?
It already has. We've reserved eight office suites already to move in in July. And
so do you think this is businesses that perhaps are currently on the periphery of London, but have still got all the nightmare in terms of daily commute and everything else, and thinking, look, if we just went another 10 miles out, this is where we could be.
Yeah, well, because of the train service, isn't it, from Ebbsfleet into town.
But there's absolutely nothing in the area.
No. Right, OK, so it's just poorly serviced.
Yeah, it is really poorly
there's
serviced.
There's a Sainsbury's up the road, that's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, and for storage as well, there's the nearest one to us is Dartford.
Right.
Mm. And the journey into Dartford, as we know...
That's even worse there, though, because it's on the Crossways Park thing, isn't it? That's a nightmare.
Because Ebbsfleet, you don't even have to go up the hill at Bluewater, do you? You turn off just before you get
can
to
do.
The...
Yeah, Pepper Hill. Yeah.
Several ways you can get there, actually.
Which is where I always get stuck in the mornings.
But literally, if the traffic's free-flowing, so you would come off of the A2 at Sainsbury's at Pepper Hill, and it's like a minute, isn't it, off the A2.
So really convenient, nothing else around it at the moment, makes sense for all sorts of different reasons.
And it'll be a great place to be.
Yes.
I've got all the Kent-based places.
Yeah. There's always a warm welcome.
Yes.
Good, so there'll
be a hat-trick.
There'll be networking there as well and everything else. Okay. Yeah. Now, I know you've got a couple of offers that you're running. Let's talk about the Ebbsfleet. If you reserve before your open offer. Is that right? Is that how it's working, or is that now finished?
No, it's to if you are able to reserve a plan for the end of June, which right. is actually this week. So there's not much longer.
Is it
left.
Sunday, the end of June? Something like that, isn't
yes,
it?
We'll yeah, we'll go for Sunday. So if you're able to reserve a plan for then, you get 2 months free rental.
Gosh. So that's 2 months free as well if you reserve before the end of June. What's the best way to do that? How do people get in touch with you, Shannon, to have that conversation and find out? And I guess, can I come and see the site so I kind of can get a feel for what unit and where? And
yeah, we are doing visits down there. Obviously, it's a building site at the moment, so we're doing the visits by appointment only. But yeah, we've had office visits already. So
can I email you? Is that the best? Is sr@kentspace.co.uk?
Or they can call. The number is 01474 555300.
And it's on your, I know it's on your website as well, I guess, all of the contact details for Ebbsfleet, aren't they?
It's getting there. We've had a bit of a glitch.
Oh, have you? Oh,
yes.
No.
But it's
not a website glitch, surely.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Ebbsfleet
yeah.
will be on there.
Okay. Well, I would just talk to Shannon directly.
Please. And they could also talk to Shannon at BBN Maidstone, of course. Because she's there relentlessly.
Not before Sunday, though, Brian.
No, we're not there this week. We were there last week.
BBN Dartford on Thursday.
Oh, yes, Sue will be at BBN Dartford on Thursday.
Have a conversation with Sue there then. Brilliant.
They're everywhere.
Good.
Have BBN, Kent Spacer there.
So that's one offer that you're running for Ebbsfleet in terms of 2 months free office space. But just going back to your storage quickly, you've got another fabulous add-on for your storage, haven't you, where won't you collect people's stuff for them free of charge or something? So how does that work?
You get a free collection as long as it's within Kent.
Right.
And we can bring you in to store. So, you can get that booked on as soon as you put your reservation down, you can book that. And we also do the price matching. So if there's anywhere out there that you feel is equal to us and they're giving you a better deal, then let us know and we're happily price matching.
So you'll come and pick it up. You'll price match regardless, as long as it's obviously Kent.
And like for like. Mm. Uh-huh. We can't compete with container storage.
No.
But if it's internal storage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there's kind of... It's just a win all round, isn't it, by the sounds
of
it?
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
We like those.
Fantastic. Guys, there's so much to your business, and we very rarely get the chance to understand all of it in this much detail. So I'm so glad you came on today, because I've learnt an awful lot today as well, and I thought I knew you fairly well. But it's not until you kind of get involved in a proper conversation that you kind of understand all the opportunities. And actually, I'm quite tempted to set up a business that sources in the Far East and just get you guys to manage it for me. And I'll go and live in Florida, which is kind of really all I want to do anyway. So thank you so much for coming on, Shannon and
thank
Sue.
You.
Quick reminder, we have got Sue's networking here at Kent Space on Wednesday evening. And so we look forward to seeing you then. Get there early because the Hoover is coming. And if you'd like a cocktail sausage and a lovely sandwich, you will need to be here fairly early. But I think it starts at 5:30, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Good. All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to play... A bit more tunage. Bit of linkage into our next guest. So let's see.
We can have a break for how long? Three minutes, 54 seconds?
About 3 minutes, something like that. Yeah, it doesn't tell me here exactly. So we'll be back very shortly.
Maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, and what do you see? Do you see it clearer? Or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're only human after all. Don't put the blame.
put your blame on me. My opinion, don't ask me to lie and beg for forgiveness for making you cry, for making you cry. 'Cause I'm only human after all, I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me, don't put the blame on me. I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent underscore biz.
Welcome back, everybody, and you're listening to the Kent Biz Connect radio show. We're in the very much the sort of the third.
The third show.
Yes, I keep forgetting we're an hour and a half, so we're an hour in. So welcome back, Brian. You're the tunage.
You want the linkage, don't you?
You're the tunage.
Do you know who that was? That was Rag and Bone Man.
Rag and Bone Man.
With a song called Human.
Yes.
And the linkage is because we're going to talk about resources. We are human. It's human resources.
We are indeed. And on that note, welcome, Dave.
Thank you very much,
Dave Burton from QMEH, and also Danielle. Is it Danielle, or do you prefer Danny or Dan?
Dave tends to call me Dan.
But you're easy.
Danielle, I'm fine, yeah.
Anything. Anyway, welcome to the show. It's so lovely to have you here. Dave, you've been on with me on the radio before. You're a dab hand at this.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But it's lovely to have you back because you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to businesses who are thinking about quality assurance, environmental management, all that kind of compliance stuff as well. It's so important in the workplace today. So just give us a quick overview in terms of what QBH Solutions are all about.
Well, as Brian said, we do a bit with human resources, HR. Nice link, by the way.
Thank you.
And the ISO stuff. So it's ISO 9001, which is the quality assurance management system, 14001, which is environmental management, 27001, which is data and information security, and 45001, which is health and safety, which used to be, I'm getting a bit nerdy on you now, OSAS 18001, but
right.
It's been freshened up now, if you like.
Okay. So there's lots of M1s, isn't there?
And it is weird how it's a one on the end.
What's the story there then, Dave?
Well, it's a long and convoluted story, but basically the ISO standard started in the mid-50s, and it was sort of BSEN 8-something, I can't remember, don't quote me, I've just done a blog on it, have a look on the website. And it's gone through different versions and refreshes. It's an international standard panel from across the world get together to decide what should be in that standard.
That's the key thing. It's an international standard rather than a UK.
Absolutely. Mm. So if you hold ISO 9001 here, in theory, if you go to America, to Asia, wherever, you are assuring the processes that you have in the business to meet that level of quality and ergo guarantee the quality of the product or service you're providing.
So if you are a business that does business internationally or within Europe, you've got the accreditation that actually your suppliers or your customers
it's all
might
about
be
the
looking
M1.
For. Yeah.
It is all about the and what. But it, as you say, it's probably more for the majority of our client base, which tends to be smaller, medium-sized businesses. It's their clients. So further up that supply chain, further up that hierarchy, are tending to dictate that their clients and customers need it. And we come along because they've got to get it, and then hopefully they've actually seen the value of it as well. It's,
so that's the crux of it. You know, where is the value? What does it actually say to a potential customer, for example, about my business? Because that's really what it's all about, isn't it? What does it actually mean?
It means a couple of different things, probably most importantly for your clients, that you can deliver the service they want you to provide. So if you're maybe tendering for a piece of work with a local authority or a big public sector interfacing company or organisation, it can tend to be quite high-yield stuff. So they need to know that even if you're a smaller business, you can still provide that service. Mm-hmm. There's been some changes in the last couple of years in procurement regulations to try and open up these bigger government contracts to smaller businesses rather than going to the bigger companies. Yes. And that ISO has gone through that reversion to facilitate that transition with those regulations to open it up to smaller and micro businesses. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of one people bands.
Right, so it's not the remit of big business, far from it. But it's nevertheless, it's something that you need to have if you can reasonably expect to pick up those kind of tender wins and contract wins in the public sector, for example.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not... You can still tender for work if you don't have it.
Yeah.
What it tends to do is when you get your tender through or your PQQ, your pre-qualification questionnaire...
Yes.
If you have that certificate and attach that certificate to that tender, then you haven't got to answer a load of questions.
So it means I can deliver a standard of service or product consistently to the same standard of service that I need to deliver it. So it's reassurance.
Absolutely. I mean, without getting too nerdy about it, it came out of Japan originally through the development of the manufacturing process. Mm. So I think it was Honda that trailblazed it years ago, where they were creating a production line for pieces for the engines, for the motorbikes at the time, and they needed to have a tolerance for each piece to, you know, so they could produce the production line manufacturing process. So it guaranteed that process. It was assuring the quality of the product, hence quality assurance, and that's now gone to products, services, all sorts of.
So critical stuff. So was that all linked in with just in time? Was that whole movement, was that part of it? Or
It came into it, I mean, that was what, late 80s, early 90s, just in time. I mean, it's grown different levels now in terms of where we're with logistics and where we can talk about motorways and things like that. Maybe that's another time. But that came about then after, I think, the third or fourth version of the standard to then accommodate that. Then we had things like Six Sigma and all that kind of stuff. Which seems
lean manufacturing all of that, So, Shannon and Sue, is this something that you guys have ever looked at as a sort of a quality assurance accreditation for Kent Space, for example? Or? It's not something that you've been asked for or you've been conscious of in the past?
I mean, we're members of the Medway Fair Traders. I mean, that's about as far as our compliance goes, and the Self-Storage Association. Mm-hmm. So
trade bodies rather than...
Yeah, so we have our own sort of associations, really, mm-hmm. that check us for a lot of our things.
Yes.
We don't.
It's interesting. Because I guess, I mean, most businesses in the UK are small owner-managed businesses, and we all know how. I mean, so you know, you fall into this as well. I think, you know, as ops director here, we all know how critical we perceive our role to be within our business because we haven't managed ourselves out of our business. That's the reality. And therefore, we are critical to our business. And if we're not there, then the business, you know, effectively ceases to exist, doesn't it? You know, on a day-to-day basis. But what I guess you're talking about is a system whereby, because it's process-driven, everything the business does, you can actually take certain individuals out of the business, or let's say they were absent from the business, and somebody else could run the business.
Absolutely. A lot of the clients that we're working with at the moment, once you get past that, oh, my client, my customer's telling me I need to have it, whatever, it is a case where somebody's maybe preparing the business for sale, or they want to step back. You know, they've been running it for 10, 20 years, however long it is. They want to step back and they want to hand it over. And that's where we come in. In fact, we do this piece of work for companies that aren't even going for ISO necessarily, for the ISO standard, where we go in and we work through that. We call it service delivery process. So it's, you know, phone call from a customer or a client phoning you up or sending you an email saying, we want this many widgets or we want this service. How do you get to the point where you're delivering that product and service and, most importantly, getting paid for it? And any feedback through that. And we map that out in a flow chart or procedure or pictures or whatever it is the client wants. And it forms a manual.
Yeah. Well, there you go. A manual. Then, that's the key thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's written down.
It doesn't have to be a dusty old folder that sits on the shelf. It can be an integrated, sexy computer system or piece of software that you can then say, well, you do this at this point, you do this at that point, and tell me I'll be on the golf course if there's a problem. Because, you know, that's the dream, isn't it?
Right,
but they can facilitate that as well.
So I guess there's a lot of family businesses out there. I mean, we mentioned family businesses, you know, in the context of Kiba earlier, and I'd imagine they fall into this trap quite often of, you know, perhaps it's been handed down from father to son. I mean, I know a local business that's very much like this. And, you know, that individual now running the business is so incredibly hands-on. And when you're actually in their offices, the number of times the door opens and closes because somebody's coming in to ask them a question. And it's the most inane stuff you wouldn't believe. And you're thinking, what on earth are you? You know, we're in the middle of a meeting and you're answering questions about how many tea bags to order or, you know, whatever it is, because they've just got so hands-on at the micro level.
Yeah, nobody else is allowed to actually order them.
Oh.
But there's also a balance as well, is what makes, certainly in this part of the world, certainly in the Southeast, these small family-run or family-owned or own and manage businesses are unique because of that vision of that entrepreneur or that person or family or team that set it up. So you don't want to dilute that.
No.
But you're absolutely right. You don't be worried about ordering tea bags.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, delegate that and empower other people to make some of those decisions, which is kind of moving on to more of the HR stuff now. Mm. But facilitation, sorry. But just allowing that to happen and creating that space.
Yeah.
Do you have a sort of typical type of business that you tend to work with, Dave?
Not really. Every business, once you get through the front door and meet with people, is completely unique. But if we had a niche, it would be predominantly service sector. People or companies or organisations that provide service and how you get that service to deliver. Or get that service delivered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we still also do work with a couple of manufacturing companies as well.
So. And I was thinking about, you know, franchising. A lot of businesses, I think, you know, they've been going for a few years and they see the opportunity perhaps to franchise their business. And that's a classic example of where you would need. I mean, regardless of whether you go for certification and accreditation at, you know, ISO level, you need the process, you need the manual to be able to say to somebody else that's going to buy a franchise from you how to run the business, don't you? You know, because otherwise it's all in your head. So that would certainly seem an obvious one.
I mean, the thing that tends to happen, obviously, if you go for the quality or health and safety, or the standards, the ones, you're audited by an external company. And the auditor, 9 times out of 10, where there's a problem that, you know, that we've experienced, is that the business owner has kept something in his or her head and not filed it in the right folder or whatever, so the evidence isn't there. So it's just drawing things out. I mean, if you win the lottery, I use that example rather than anything more sinister, can the business still work without you there? And the more information you can give me or to give Danielle and I, the better the process we can run for you.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be ISO accreditation.
No, sure.
But the value in the process is kind of what we're talking about here as well. I mean, Sue, you've just employed a new manager here at Ashford, haven't you? So, I mean, there's an awful lot to learn. So, you know, how do you go? You can't do that all one-on-one, face-to-face, nice that it is. So you have to kind of give them something, I guess, a framework, do you, in the first instance?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really lucky that all three camps have got great teams. And yes, I mean, I've been down here a lot supporting Vicky at the moment because she's needed somebody out on the front desk So now we've recruited our assistant manager. But I sit in the background and still do my job while Vicky does the look after the training and the you know, bringing her on and making sure everything's okay. So I'm lucky enough to be able to give a lot of responsibility to the teams.
And you've got layers of yeah, people, so yeah. It doesn't have to be you all the time.
No. I mean, Shannon's busy building lists of shopping and bits and pieces that we need to get for Ebbsfleet
yes,
and staff and things like that. We sit down and we have a catch up and then we go, yep, press the green button on that, or let's not press the button on that.
Okay. All right. So it's a very sort of inclusive, dynamic environment. Yeah. But not all businesses are like that, obviously. That's the thing.
No, but we can help them be like that if they want to.
Yes, of course. That's the key. Yeah.
Yeah. There's sometimes a reluctance. We're trying to come away maybe from businesses that aren't. Don't see the value in it.
Right,
Can be a bit of a struggle then
to do the
work and then more importantly get paid for it.
Yes.
So it's a balance.
Because value is a kind of function. Cost is a function of value at the end of the day. So, I mean, you know, off the top of your head, you know, how much does it cost to go through the A to Z of this process, if you like, from start to finish for a business that maybe employs up to 10 people?
Okay. So a business from a certification point of view, and there's a couple of good certification companies out there, would be in the region of $1,500 to $2,000 for certification.
Right.
But that's a stage one audit, a stage two audit, and then surveillance audits as well.
So that's not the job that you do.
That's not what we do.
So once you've done your job, you need to then call in, or you would help manage the process whereby an external auditor comes in and actually validates the work and gives you the certification.
Mm-hmm. And our charges range, again, it depends on, you know, we're lucky enough to have a massive spectrum of people where we'll go in and do absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that costs a little bit more. Or we're working with business owners and they're going away and doing something and we're coaching them through that process. Mm-hmm. So it can range from our time from 1,500 quid up to $4,000, just depending on the size of the business and what we do. I appreciate it's quite a big spectrum.
Yeah, you know, but, a £5,000 investment, sort of, you know, including the certification, you can take your business from where it is today, which is all about you, the business owner, to
an autonomous,
a bona fide business that can stand on its own two feet without you.
We've just done a review for a tender that I'm writing, and every single client that we've had put 9,001 in, bar two, have demonstrated they've recouped that investment quite quickly, in terms of efficiency savings and resources and.
Well, productivity, apart from anything else, you know, the example I quoted with the business owner whose door is continually going back and forth with a steady stream of employees. I mean, you know, you work that out over a year and, you know, what have they actually done? What does their working day actually look like? You know, apart from answering questions that other people should know the answers to themselves or be empowered to actually go away and do.
Yeah, and trying to create that environment, not only putting the system in, but creating that environment where people are feeling confident and comfortable to make mistakes.
Because that's the other thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, nobody likes to be micromanaged and, you know, kind of on a lead all the time. You know, you want to be a bit autonomous. You want to bring something yourself to the job, I would imagine, for most people.
Definitely.
Because money isn't a motivator. Money is a demotivator, if that makes sense. If you don't think you're being paid enough, it's demotivating. You know, being paid lots of money isn't enough to get you out of bed in the morning over, you know, a long period of time.
Exactly. It's the longevity. It works for a couple of weeks or a month or two.
Yeah, oh, crikey.
Novelty wears off.
Have I really got to get on that plane to Edinburgh, you know, on a Monday morning in the middle of winter?
Because an airport and a hotel room can look the same wherever you are in the world, can't they? Really? But
they do, definitely.
So there is a very real ROI there on all sorts of levels. You know, staff turnover. You know, less of that, and you know, recruitment costs. I mean, recruiting one person alone, you know, you're probably going to spend north of $5,000, aren't you, on one roll? Well, so
indeed, and depending on the roll. But once you've spent that and made that investment, you know, with good recruitment and selection, good induction, good appraisal, maybe supervision, one-to-ones, whatever you want to call it, you're then keeping that return on investment. And more importantly, hopefully they're then developing and adding value to what you're doing. Because, you know, we outsource our social media stuff, as we were talking about earlier, then because I'm not an expert at it. So that's why you bring people in, you know, to be your experts in certain areas. But it does require an element of letting go of control. And a good system will hopefully allow you to do that, give you the confidence to do that and step back a little bit.
Brilliant. You've kind of completely demystified the whole thing for me, Dave. Want to talk very quickly about environmental.
Yes.
Because that is so topical again at the moment, isn't it? And that's not about, you know, letting, I don't know, pollutants into rivers and stuff like that necessarily. It's how do you manage your waste day to day? We were talking about that before we came on air. And have
do
your,
lots of sit-ups.
Yeah, well, thank you, Brian. Thank you for bringing it down to that level. But, you know, are your subcontractors, have they got the right certification to manage, you know, the waste that you're giving them to take away each week? You know, environmental is I'd imagine, a very hot potato for a lot of businesses at the moment.
It is, and regardless what maybe is coming out of the States and other countries about the validity of climate change and all the rest of it, I won't open that one. But there's a requirement that you as a business, so you as an organisation, know where your waste is going. So it could be something as simple as your recycling. So you need your waste transfer notice to know that that recycling is being recycled and not dumped in the lane down the road, all the way through to, we were talking, Brian, about asbestos. You know, that you don't want going somewhere it shouldn't. The ramifications of that, as we've seen in the news, is quite serious. So there is an obligation to manage that. And this standard is about, it talks about managing it. And it's not about everybody having an electric vehicle or everybody getting on the train.
No.
It's small and often, little things. Let's try and reduce our mileage, business miles, by 2.5% next year. Let's change to this, printer settings, paper. There's lots of little things that we can do that will make those changes. It all adds up, because it's such a massive problem that we kind of blind ourselves to it.
So are we talking carbon footprint here? Is that part of it? Or
the way we manage it is we put together a thing called an aspect impact register, environmental aspect. What does your business do that impacts on the environment, and how can we manage it? And some of it can be quite serious stuff, you know, dealing with chemicals and pollutants going into the water stream and stuff. How do we stop that from happening? What do we do to manage it?
I used to have a friend that ran a paper plant in Maidstone, the GE plant that shut down a couple of years ago, that they're now building a big housing estate on.
Alsford newsprint?
No. It's a GE paper mill. Been there for over 100 years, I think. Anyway, it shut down a couple of years ago. But obviously they're using tons and tons of chemicals in their manufacturing process. And they had to be incredibly careful in terms of making sure that stuff didn't leak out into, you know, the surrounding kind of, you know, water, you know, river or, you know, whatever it was. And unfortunately, it would happen. You know, stuff would leak out, and obviously there'd be big fines associated with that.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, with a good emergency plan or a contingency plan, you can do something to damage limit, damage control, that impact on the environment. But there's a lot of things that the system will do. I mean, we were talking about waste, we talked about energy use, for example, things like regularly servicing your air conditioning, so it's not working as hard to do what it was doing when it was brand new, for example. Yeah, it's there. It's less 27001, which is the information data security standard, has now kind of just pipped 14001, environmental standard, is the second most sought after.
Right.
As well. So that's just happened in the last, I think.
So this is GDPR related and
GDPR,
Information Commissioner's Office and all of that.
But people are looking, bigger companies, again, going back to that supply chain, need an assurance. Because, again, under GDPR, they're the ones that are going to get it in the neck if their contractors have a data breach or lose data or leave a laptop on the train or whatever and don't manage it. And again, it sounds big and scary, but it's just little things, little tweaks and changes you can make to processes that will keep you safe and keep you out of trouble.
Yeah. So are we saying then there's three sort of key fundamentals that businesses should be thinking about? One is environment. One is quality standards, but not necessarily with a view to getting accreditation, but more about how you manage, how your business manages itself day to day without you. And then the other one is data, I guess.
Yeah. And health and safety as well.
And of course,
an area unless it's a health and safety management system, we've got some really good health and safety people we work with. But those four areas really are the kind of backroom boring stuff.
Mm.
But it can also be the difference between a big fine or the worst case scenario. I don't like to talk about that.
Because you can be audited at any time, can't you? I mean, the health and safety executive or the environment agency, they can rock up at your business premises at any time and say, right, I'd like to see your process for how you dispose of this waste, please.
And the ICO now under GDPR, they can come in and say, well, show us your security processes.
Yeah.
It tends to be rolled out and challenged towards the bigger companies, but there are smaller businesses.
And there's no comfort in the fact that you've outsourced it to a third party. Because if they haven't got the right certification and they're acting on your behalf, then you're just as liable, I'm assuming, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's caveats to that, as with most things, but there has to be a process of due diligence. To make sure that you've satisfied yourself, that you haven't just abdicated it and said, get on with it, guys.
Yeah.
And then you see a waste tipped down the side of the lane and see your documents in there because nobody really wants that to happen, for example.
Yeah. I mean, it's shocking in the news at the moment because a lot of our waste is ending up in, you know, in Southeast Asia and places like that, isn't it?
Is it? Any particular reason?
Well, because it's cheaper. So we've outsourced it. So whoever it is, you know, the government or whoever it is that's managing, or the local authority that's managing it, has decided it's cheaper for them to ship it overseas on huge kind of container ships or however they do it, and get them to manage it in their landfill sites than it is for us to bury it here.
And interestingly,
and recycle it.
Canada had a similar model to outsource it, and they sent it back. It was either Taiwan or Thailand. I can't remember which one. Sent it back.
Yes.
So there's a boat going backwards and forwards across the Pacific.
Because it's toxic and they're not going to manage it or whatever it was. But yeah, that's the big scandal at the moment. You know, we're all diligently going about our recycling, you know, every week. And my flipping bin men won't take my recycling bin if it's got a tiny little bit of paper in it, because I have to put that in a separate bag. So we've got black, blue, and we've got a red bag for all our paper. Well, if there's any paper in my blue recycling, which is supposed to be plastic and glass, they won't take it. But the reality is most of it's getting put on a ship and shipped halfway across the world and getting dealt with there anyway.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
Virtually every council and adjoining councils have different rules.
Mm.
Now, it's ultimately going to end up in the same place, surely, at some point.
Exactly.
We need to reduce it at the start, that's the thing.
Anyway, we have, believe it or not, we have run out of time.
Have we really?
Already today.
I can't believe it.
And I find all of this quite fascinating. I could talk for hours on this, but we're not able to. Dave, how do we get in touch with you? All sorts of reasons.
All of the above. Website is qbhsolutions.co.uk. Email is info@qbhsolutions.co.uk.
Well. And I happen to know that you're at QBH Limited on the Twitter.
We are, yes.
And you're also on LinkedIn. So keep a lookout for Dave and Danielle, of course, all over social media in the next couple of weeks. Sue and Shannon, thank you again for joining us today. I will be back here in 2 weeks' time.
On the 8th of July.
But you won't be.
I won't be. I shall be stunning the bod in Majorca for a couple of weeks. So
the brilliant Tracy
Credit
Restall
Control Trace
will be subbing for you.
Yeah. Is subbing for me. Yeah. You're not allowed to use that word.
No, of course. That's not a BBN word.
Will be sitting in for me.
Yes.
And, yeah, I'll be back with you on the 22nd of July.
Yes, so fantastic. So I think what we're going to do now is we're going to play out with a little bit of tunage, and we look forward to another show in 2 weeks' time. And again, thank you to all of you brilliant guys for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Get like